90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello, good morning. This is Joseph Jackson, your host, and welcome to Cowtown Conversations. And this morning, it is a very, very cold and wet, rainy morning. And if you don't have anywhere to go, my advice is to stay inside, because my trek to the station this morning, while the streets were still wet, it is now getting ready to begin to freeze over from about 9 to 11. So definitely stay inside and stay warm. But most of all, stay healthy. So we're going to continue our conversation this morning on health, because the health of a community is directly related to the wealth of the community. And last week we had a conversation on prenatal. Today we're going to have a discussion on with the representative from the American Heart Association on heart health. Heart disease is the leading cause in the 3rd and 5th district of residents' premature death. So this morning, our guest is Kelly Stanzi, and she is a volunteer with the American Heart Association. She's going to tell our story. Good morning, Kelly. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Thank you. Good morning.
So we know that a normal blood pressure is considered anything less than 120 over 80. Can you tell us what was your blood pressure when you were diagnosed with hypertension and a little bit about your story?
Yeah, so my average readings when I first found out I had high blood pressure were around 160 over 100, which, according to American Heart Association's old standards for hypertension, were actually stage 2 hypertension. What makes that even more concerning is that when I was diagnosed, I was a 26-year-old half marathoner planning a wedding. You know, height of my health, the best shape I'd ever been in, incredibly fit, taking care of myself, had a healthy weight because I had that wedding dress to fit into. And I went to the doctor for something else, and, you know, there are alarms going off in the room I was in because my blood pressure was so high. So we actually instantly changed some of the prescriptions I was on because they wanted to reduce my immediate risk of stroke. When you're that young, that's quite an eye-opening experience for sure.
So how did the doctor determine that you had high blood pressure? Was it just off of this one test, or was there a series of tests?
So the initial reading was incredibly concerning, and they try to use an average over a few days to actually determine hypertension, because a lot of people have what can be referred to as white coat syndrome. They get nervous when they're at the doctor, so their blood pressure is higher. But mine was so incredibly high, we tracked it for 3 days, and it never came down. So immediately, they put me on some blood pressure medication to try and get me out of that high risk for stroke stage that I was in and had no idea.
So for our listeners, your blood pressure is consisted of two numbers. The top number is called your systolic pressure. The bottom number is called your diastolic pressure. Doctors prefer your top number to be less than 120 and your bottom number to be no higher than 80. That is what's considered a normal blood pressure. So, and the high blood pressure is considered anything above 120 over 80. But then it has pre-hypertension, which tends to get worse over time. It has a systolic pressure reading ranging from 120 to 139 and a diastolic pressure range from 80 to 89. Stage 1 hypertension, which is a systolic pressure ranges from 140 to 159, or a diastolic pressure ranges from 90 to 99. So then you were essentially at stage two hypertension, which is a systolic pressure of 160 or higher, or a diastolic pressure of 100 or higher.
Yep.
And that is definitely the point where people, the doctors really get concerned, because you're in a stroke range at that particular point.
Yeah, I actually was told at one point in time that I was a walking stroke risk. And that's scary for anyone, but when you're, you know, just beginning your life with the love of your life, we were buying a house, counting down to our wedding day, it's definitely eye-opening. And I think everyone should definitely take it seriously.
Did you have any, high blood pressure is called the silent killer. That's because it doesn't, there are no obvious symptoms or signs. And some people, there are signs, but did you have any signs with it? I know some people may experience nosebleeds, headaches, dizziness, because hypertension can sneak up on you. Did you experience any of those being you were running half marathons, exercising?
Yeah, I did actually. So every year I usually do a lot of races in the fall. And then I take, like, Thanksgiving to Christmas off to just kind of recoup, because, you know, consistent running is pretty hard on your body. And when I started to get back into it in January of last year, I didn't feel like myself. I started getting headaches every time I tried to run. I just would feel nauseous all the time. I couldn't hold down food after I would eat or after I would run, which normally eating is my favorite thing to do. So I go for a run and then I eat a meal to recover. It was just something didn't feel right. And I was just trying to push through it. And I probably should have known something was off. But just that runner mentality of I'm strong, I can push through it. You know, if I can run 13.1 miles, I can, you know, run a 4-mile run with a headache. So it's actually very fortunate that I had that doctor's appointment when I did. Because if I had kept pushing myself the way I was, there's no way to know that, you know, my symptoms wouldn't have gotten worse, or I could have actually had a stroke.
Yes, that would definitely. And that is, you know, many people with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. High blood pressure develops slowly over time, and it can be related to many causes. One thing people need to know about high blood pressure is that it cannot be cured. However, it can be managed very effectively through lifestyle changes when needed, with medication. But the best thing to know, as Kelly found out, is that you have to know your numbers. And that's how you protect yourself, is to learn where you stand by getting your blood pressure checked. So how often now do you check your blood pressure, Kelly?
For about 6 months, I was actually taking it daily because we were trying out different combinations of medication. Now that it's actually in a well-controlled place, I actually just had my annual physical and it looks great. My doctor was really happy with where it's at. I only check it a few times a week, but the important thing is to check it consistently and take an average of your readings, because one day you might be stressed out, one day you might not be feeling well. All of these different elements can impact your blood pressure and cause an anomaly in your readings. So you could be sick, have a lower blood pressure than normal, and not realize that, well, on average, you're actually hypertensive.
And what we need to understands that 33% of American adults have high blood pressure, yet, and about 14% of adults age 60 or older, they don't even know they have it. That's because high blood pressure, as we've been said, is a silent killer and does not have any symptoms. But the best thing that you can do is to get your blood pressure taken. If it runs high, then go ask your doctor to take it. You know, there are many clinics. You can go to a clinic. You can, you know, some doctors can get you a blood pressure machine. You can take it at home. But that is the best indicator to find out if you have high blood pressure, is to take your blood pressure over a couple of days span. And sometimes take it at the same time of day. Sometimes take it at a different time of day, because, you know, it may be it's probably going to be lower in the morning when you just get up. But, you know, if you just came in from a bag of, you know, carrying a bag of groceries up the steps, it's going to be a little bit higher. So those are things that you have to worry about. So did you, when you were taking your blood pressure, Kelly, did you find that it was, when you were, well, let's step back. Exercise is one of the things that you look at trying to do to help your blood pressure stay lower. So when you were exercising, was your blood pressure going down or was it going up higher?
It was actually going up higher for me because I was doing high impact endurance. So it's important to know, like, exercise in regards to what can help blood pressure does not have to be going to the gym and working yourself crazy for an hour. It can be going for a walk. It can be standing at your desk instead of sitting. It can be yoga. It doesn't necessarily have to be the kind of high impact exercise I was doing as a half marathoner. The difference is, though, I was forcing myself to run when I already didn't feel great. So that extra strain I was putting on my body was actually causing my blood pressure to spike when I was running. So if you can get into a consistent exercise routine, if you need to ease into it, that's fine. Even if you're just going for, you know, a walk around the block a few times every day, it's still better than what most Americans are actually scheduling for themselves as far as activity goes. So one of the biggest things is making sure that you're finding a balance of exercise that is right for you. Like right now, after the last year of getting this figured out, I actually barely run anymore. I do a lot more of like stationary biking and stuff because I'm relearning what my body needs after taking time off and starting new medications. So there's no shame in you know, me taking a walk instead of going for a 6-mile run like I would have 2 years ago, just because that's what my body needs, even if my brain is like, hey, Kelly, you should be running a half marathon right now.
And what you said is so true, because it says, how much exercise do you need per week? And it says, aim for at least 2.5 hours of moderate physical exercise each week. It says that, you know, if you're up for an intensive workout, you'll get a heart pumping benefits with at least 75 minutes of vigorous exercise throughout the week, or a combination of both. So it doesn't have to mean running. As I said, just anything that gets your heart rate elevated. You could be sitting on a bicycle. Anything that that you can do to get your heart rate elevated will be better for your health.
Part of why that's important is blood pressure is actually a measure of how hard your heart has to work to pump the blood through your body. So a stronger heart that's regularly exercised actually is more, it's stronger, literally, in the terms of a muscle, to be able to combat, you know, closing off of veins. So, like, a good example of why certain symptoms happen, you get headaches when you have high blood pressure because the veins in your brain are constricted, and it's actually very similar in symptoms to a migraine at times because it's a lot of the same problem. But what a lot of people don't realize is, yes, blood pressure spikes are very dangerous, but it's the consistent wear and tear of your veins constantly getting stretched and constricting and getting stretched and constricting because of your blood pressure having to be so high to pump the blood that creates the wear and tear that actually leads to things like heart attack, stroke, blood clots. It's really fascinating. The science of it is really interesting, and I've had the opportunity to learn a lot of how these things interact with each other just over the last year, learning how to manage this and try to be an athlete. It's fascinating, but it's also really scary knowing that this is going on inside of my own body.
One of the things that you definitely need to make sure of when you're trying to exercise is that while you may be moving fast enough to raise your heart rate and breathe harder, you should be still able to talk to someone while you're doing it. Because if you're exercising at a rate where you can't hold a normal conversation, you're doing something too much.
Correct. And that's actually one of my mechanisms for handling that is when I do run, I always do it with a group. There's several running clubs and like group meetups around Kansas City. Probably I would say one for every day of the week. I join them in the Northland on Wednesdays and Sundays usually. And having someone to talk to while I run is actually a really good tool for making sure that I'm maintaining a healthy heart rate, especially right now as I'm, like I said, relearning how my body works under the new medications and new chemical balances, essentially. So building in little tips and tricks to make sure that you're not overdoing it is actually really helpful. I know people that always sing when they're working out. Like, they'll be on their bike, their stationary bike, or at the gym or something, and they'll even be singing to themselves under their breath. But as long as they're able to keep that consistent, like, in and out breathing, they're able to track that their heart rate is where they need it to be.
We know that heart disease is the number one killer of women in the United States, and sometimes women chalk it up to life-threatening conditions. Some say acid reflux, it may be the flu, or normal aging. You found your high blood pressure when you go into the doctor. Are there any suggestions that you would give to people if they're having certain symptoms, that they questions they should ask their doctor when they go to the doctor to have a physical or a checkup?
Yeah, so I'm a perfect example of someone who dismissed their symptoms for probably too long, because I also have acid reflux, so I get heartburn really easily. I get migraines very easily. I had all of these different things going on that were distracting me from what was really going on. So if you feel off, if you feel like it's a different kind of headache than you're normally getting, if you feel like the flutter in your chest that could be heartburn or could be something else doesn't quite feel right, listen to your body. Women are especially at risk for this because we're so busy taking care of others. And again, I was a perfect example of that. I was planning a wedding and I was nesting, getting ready to buy a house with my fiance, now husband. And I felt like taking time to care for myself would be letting others down around me. So I needed the wake-up call of going to the doctor and hearing, like, you have stage 2 hypertension. You need to slow down and actually care for yourself. It was definitely a wake-up call.
We know that heart attacks, there are different signs, but I know in women, it can be an uncomfortable pressure, a squeezing, a fullness, a pain in the center of your chest. If it lasts more than a few minutes, it goes away and comes back. It can be a pain or difficult in one or both arms, the back, the neck, the jaw, the stomach. You can have shortness of breath with or without chest discomfort. Other signs such as breaking out in cold sweat, nausea, lightheadedness. As with men, women's most common heart attack symptoms are chest pain and discomfort, but women are somewhat more likely than men to experience some of the same other symptoms, particularly shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, and back or jaw pain. You know, we were talking earlier and you were off air and you were saying that heart disease, your dad died of a heart attack. Looking back, did you see any of the same symptoms that you now have to go through that your dad kind of just pushed through?
Yeah, my dad actually had, he's the reason everyone in my family has acid reflux. I have 3 siblings. All 3 of us have it. So I remember him going to the hospital when we were kids because he was having a really bad acid attack. And now looking back, I wonder how many times he actually was having a minor heart attack and was just dismissing it as being his acid condition. So that's definitely very interesting to know that all these years later, I pushed through maybe some of the same symptoms that my dad would have experienced. He passed away at the age of 46 of a very severe heart attack. So, yeah, that realization that I'm more than half the age he was when he passed is scary, especially when I think, like, oh, yeah, I just ignored some signs that there was actually something very wrong with me that needed to be treated.
But now you are doing things differently than what your dad did because you know your numbers, but you've made changes in you're now doing things to make your heart healthier. You're taking the brisk walks. What other changes have you made to help yourself even better?
Yeah, I'm actually I'm on 2 different blood pressure medications right now. I'm on both a water pill and a potassium pill. And just for people that maybe don't understand why potassium matters, it actually counteracts sodium. So sodium is what raises blood pressure. Potassium is what lowers it. So what's interesting is now that I'm on a medicinal dose of potassium, I actually need to make sure I'm taking in sodium. So that's why it's important to always work directly with your doctor for what's best for you. But knowing that I was already in really good shape when this happened, it kind of changes some of the conversations about what I need to be doing. Usually when a doctor says you have high blood pressure, the first thing is, are you getting enough exercise? And I absolutely was. So now it's like, what other elements of your life can we manage? How do we handle stress? How do we handle unhealthy amounts of caffeine intake? Because that was definitely something I was doing. I was a caffeine fiend. I can't just have like a cup of coffee. It's a problem. So where most people would be like, okay, I'll cut back a little bit on caffeine, I had to be like, okay, I'm just going to stop cold turkey. So I'm completely caffeine free now, which doesn't necessarily help my blood pressure consistently, but it helps my readings when I go to take it in the morning. It's more reliable. And then just working in a lot of, you know, moderate exercise as I can. You know, I've always been a nutrition nerd. I love doing my own healthy cooking in the kitchen. So I've done even more research on how do I cut out salt or reduce salt, or how do I increase salt now that I'm on this potassium pill? How do I use more whole grains, lean meats, and really have that strong foundation of a healthy diet? Because ultimately, everyone in the running community that I mingle with nowadays, they say strong bodies are built in the kitchen and shaped in the gym. So if you don't have that foundation of strong nutrition, you're not going to be able to maintain your health through other things like fitness.
That's great.
But honestly, yeah, it's an underrated point, but honestly, like, my case was interesting because my doctor's like, you're already doing so much right. I guess we have to medicate you. And now the main goal of doctors is to actually catch earlier signs of possible future hypertension and make recommendations on lifestyle changes long before anyone would ever need medication like I do.
That's a great point. We're going to open up our studio lines if our listeners have any questions. This number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. And you were talking about coffee, and one of the studies that I was looking at said caffeinated coffee causes a short-term spike in blood pressure in people who don't drink it regularly. And this is because caffeine stimulates the heart and blood vessels, according to the Mayo Clinic. In a 12-year study of more than 1,000 people ages 18 to 45 who had high blood pressure, those who drank four more cups of coffee per day were four times more likely to have a heart attack or stroke. So you have to look at how much coffee you're drinking per day. It's like everything in moderation. Alcohol raises blood pressure. Salt raises the blood pressure. You know, you have to figure out what you want to have to do. But the first thing you have to do is you have to know your numbers. But Kelly, what would you recommend to people to definitely begin to get to, if they think they have it, to schedule a physical and talk to the doctor?
Absolutely. If you've been feeling a little off, if you've been getting headaches more easily, if you feel like maybe there's a flutter in your chest when you lay down flat, or even just you've been feeling like maybe you get a little more heartburn than normal, it's better to be safe than sorry. And even if you aren't hypertensive, you can actually talk to your doctor about what you can do now to prevent it down the road. Because the best way to prevent hypertension, it can't be cured. A lot of people like me have genetic predispositions to it, but a lot of it is actually very preventable. If you do have an opportunity to address it earlier on through lifestyle changes in partnership with your doctor, you absolutely should. So err on the side of better safe than sorry. Go talk to someone about your symptoms. And definitely start thinking about, is it time for you to address the future of your heart health?
The American Heart Association has five simple steps for keeping your heart healthy and under control. Number one, know your numbers. Most people diagnosed with high blood pressure want to stay below 130 over 80, but your healthcare provider can tell you your personal target pressure. Work with your doctor. Your healthcare provider will help you make a plan to lower your blood pressure. As Kelly has stated, make a few lifestyle changes. In many cases, this will be your doctor's first recommendation. It's likely to be in one of these areas. Number one, maintain a healthy weight. Strive for a body mass BMI between 18.5 and 24.9. Eat healthier. Eat lots of fruits, vegetables, and low-fat dairy, and less saturated and total fat. Reduce your sodium. Stay active. Reduce your sodium under 1,500 milligrams per day and at least 1,000 milligram a day reduction. Get active. Aim for at least 90 to 150 minutes of aerobic or dynamic resistance exercise per week with 3 sessions of isometric exercises per week. Limit alcohol. Drink no more than 1 to 2 drinks per day, 1 for women, 2 most for most men. Take ownership of your treatment by tracking your blood pressure. And as Kelly said, keep tracking your blood pressure at home because those are the things that are going to help you. And the life you save and the heart you save will be your own because these are the things that you can do to help your heart be healthy and stay healthy, even though you may have hypertension or high blood pressure. So, Kelly, you still there, Kelly?
Yes, I am.
So, as you are now on this track, so are you finding it easier to do things now that things become second nature that you thought may have been harder in the beginning to do?
It's interesting. I have to relearn a lot about my body. I'm on a pretty significant dose of, like I said, 2 different blood pressure medications, and it actually changes a lot of my body chemistry. The way I use water is different. I need to drink a lot more than most other people to be able to maintain the same level of activity. My electrolyte balance is different. So when I get done running, I need salt. Like, I absolutely need salt. So this year is all about relearning my body and what it needs. You know, I've got the nutrition there for the most part. I eat pretty healthy with some moderate treats here and there, especially during the holiday season. But for the most part, it's just really taking time to relearn what my body needs in this new chapter of my life as a hypertension patient. I haven't run a half marathon since I was diagnosed just about a year ago, and that's been hard on me mentally because I was used to being able to just do these hard things. And now I'm back to just, all right, last night I went for a very, very slow, casual 4-mile walk run. And that understanding of what I want and what my body needs aren't always necessarily the same thing. But I feel like it's getting easier and easier to meet my body halfway, find new workouts that maybe feel a little bit better for me than just straight running, understand what my cravings might mean. I do find I crave salt a lot now because I'm on that potassium pill. That means that I actually do need some sodium intake. So it's a journey for sure. And it took me, like I said, almost a year to get to this point where I feel like my body is in a place where I can finally kind of relearn and settle in.
But it's a journey that you are forever happy that you're on and that you were able to get diagnosed earlier rather than later. Because one last question before we get leave. So what age would you advocate for people now to begin to start looking at worrying about heart health?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, obviously with my family, there's no such thing as too early an age. Knowing that early death due to heart disease is very prevalent in my gene pool, you know, we started trying to be aware of our heart health fairly young. But ultimately, getting your physicals, watching your symptoms, anyone of any age should be paying attention to what their body is doing. And if it doesn't feel right, get it checked out. Err on the side of caution. There's plenty of resources out there for people who are maybe not sure about what's happening with their body. Although I will say Googling can be a really bad idea if you think there's something wrong with you. But don't just go on Google and type your symptoms because chances are you'll think you'll have like lupus or something by the end of the search. But reality is there's no time that's too early. I know people who are just a few years older than me that are heart transplant survivors and heart attack survivors and stroke survivors. And, you know, I'm living with this pretty serious health condition, and if I had just kept ignoring it, I might not be here today.
We want to thank you, Kelly, for sharing your story. And if you're looking for more information on heart health or questions that you may want to ask your doctor, the American Heart Association has great information on their web page, so please check out the American Heart Association's webpage. They can give you more information. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Next week is Martin Luther King Day, and the I Am King Foundation will be hosting a MLK Day of Service at W.B. Du Bois School, 4510 Linwood, on Monday, January 15th from 10 a.m. to noon. For more information, please call 855-711-5464. They're asking that anyone interested in volunteering to please call an RSVP so they can let you know what you would need to do. So for Cowtown Conversations, this has been Joseph Jackson. I want to definitely say thank you, Kelly, for calling in, being our guest today. This has been a great conversation on heart health. Join us next week when we'll be discussing Alzheimer's and the difference in between Alzheimer's and dementia. So tune in next week as we continue our health conversation. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day and be safe, folks.
About to